ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text number.
What have we got up there?
Okay, 29 and 30 we're going to do today, but we'll chant Text 29.
Where's Jai?
Okay. Te me matam avigaya. Paloksham vishayatmakaha Himsayam yadiraga syad Jagya eva nachodana Te me matam avigaya Paroksham vishayatmakaha Himsayam yadiragasyad Jagya eva nachodana They me, my, matam, conclusion, avigyaya, without understanding, paroksham, confidential, vishaya atmakaha, absorbed in sense gratification, himsayam, to violence, yadi, if, ragaha, attachment, syat, maybe, jagge, in the sacrificial prescriptions, eva, certainly, na, there is not, chodana, encouragement. I'll read the next verse myself, and then we'll. Himsa vihara hiyalabdhai pashubhi svasuketschaya yajante devata jagyai pitribhuta patinkalaha. You can repeat it word for word. Himsa vihara. Those who take pleasure in violence, he indeed, alabdhai, which have been slaughtered, pashubhi, by means of the animals, svasukha, for their own happiness, ichaya, with the desire, yajante, they worship. Devataha, the demigods, Jagyai, by sacrificial rituals, Pitri, the forefathers, Bhutapatin, and the leaders, among the ghostly spirits, Kalaha, cruel persons, those who are sworn to sense gratification, cannot understand the confidential conclusion of Vedic knowledge as explained by me. Taking pleasure in violence, they cruelly slaughter innocent animals in sacrifice for their own sense gratification and thus worship demigods, forefathers, and leaders among ghostly creatures. Such passion for violence, however, is never encouraged within the process of Vedic sacrifices or sacrifice. Purport. The Vedic scriptures sanction occasional animal sacrifice to satisfy cruel, low-class men who cannot live without the taste of flesh and blood. Yuck. Such concessions, however, are restricted by rigorous obligatory rituals and are meant to gradually discourage animal killing, just as the exorbitant cost of a liquor licence restricts the number of retail outlets selling alcoholic beverages. But unscrupulous persons misconstrue such restrictive sanctions and declare that Vedic sacrifice is meant for killing animals in order to enjoy sense gratification. Being materialistic, they desire to attain the planets of the forefathers or demigods and thus worship such beings. Sometimes materialistic persons are attracted to the subtle lifestyle of ghosts and worship ghostly creatures. These methods constitute gross ignorance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the actual enjoyer of all sacrifice and austerity. The demons perform Vedic sacrifice but are inimical to Lord Narayan, for they consider the demigods, the forefathers or Lord Shiva, to be equal to God. Although understanding the authority of Vedic rituals, they do not accept the ultimate Vedic conclusion and therefore never surrender to God. Thus, false religious principles flourish in the demoniac societies of the animal killers. Although in countries like America people outwardly profess to be followers of God alone, actual worship and glorification is offered to innumerable popular heroes such as entertainers, politicians, athletes and other equally insignificant persons. Animal killers, being grossly materialistic, are inevitably attracted to the extraordinary features of material illusion. They cannot understand the real platform of Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Maheyam Tadati Svapanantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pankum Langhayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam. Those who are attached here, English is those who are sworn to sense gratification. Svasukha Ichaya Yajante. So the real purpose of the Vedic message, if you like, the purpose of the Vedas is explained by Krishna in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What's going on out there? Just have a quick squeeze. Vedaischa savairaham eva vidyo vidantakrit vedavid. The study of the Vedas is meant to bring one to the point of approaching Krishna. The purpose of studying the Vedas, the purpose of sacrifice, is to bring a person to Krishna consciousness. Now, there are ritualistic activities in the Vedas, and in some of those rituals there is the performance of animal sacrifices. Here in the purport here it's mentioned occasional animal sacrifice. The Vedic scriptures sanction occasional animal sacrifice. Prabhupada explains that actually killing of animals is in what mode of material nature? Ignorance, yeah. The killing of animals is actually in the mode of ignorance. And it's fairly widespread. You know, we hear about the sacrificial lamb. Right? The sacrificial lamb. So we see in the Abrahamic traditions, you'll see there's the killing of animals, even part of their religious practice. And even in the Vedas we find that this killing of animals is present, but it's not to encourage the killing of animals, but rather it is meant to restrict the killing of animals. In fact, Prabhupada explains how in the process of offering an animal for sacrifice, in one of the procedures it's mentioned how there are prayers chanted, and then in the ear of the goat the worshipper whispers, you know, in this lifetime I'll kill you, next lifetime you can kill me. So, you know, that's meant to discourage the person, you know, it's meant to discourage the person who's killing the goat, because he's going to think, hang on a second, I have to then be slaughtered in my next lifetime. So the occasional animal sacrifice is not meant to encourage, you know, wholesale slaughter of animals, or to even encourage the sacrifice of animals in general, but rather the process of killing an animal, or shall we say sacrificing an animal, was to prove the efficacy of the brahmanas, because what would happen is that the animal sacrifice would immediately be given a new form in another body, thereby practically demonstrating the purity of the chanting of the mantras by the brahmanas and the purity of the process itself. So it wasn't performed, you know, for the purpose of getting a carcass and then cutting it up and eating it, but rather it was performed for the purpose of demonstrating the purity of the brahmana, so that the living entity that was, whose body was sacrificed, was then given a new form. But as Prabhupada points out, and he mentions, you know, one of the reasons why, the reason why the Lord appears is to establish religious principles. Dharma samstapa. What is it? Nataya. What's that? Paritranaya saudunam vinasaya chatuspitam. Dharma samstap. What's it? Sambhavami yuge yuge. Is that right? So he appears millennium after millennium to establish religious principles. And whenever there's a decline, klanir bhavati bharata, abhyutanam adharmasya, whenever there's a decline in irreligiosity, then he appears to re-establish religious principles. And Prabhupada gives the example of Buddha, because in Buddha's time, people were taking these sacrificial performances and misappropriating them and using them for the slaughter of animals purely for the consumption of flesh. But it's an, as Prabhupada, as it mentioned here in the purport, the sacrifice, the occasional animal sacrifice sanctioned in the scripture is really to satisfy, here it says, cruel, low-caste men who cannot live without the taste of flesh and blood. So you'll see in religious traditions, or not even religious traditions, shall we say, in the core principles of spiritual practice, actually the principle of ahimsa is established and maintained. The killing of animals is actually for those in the lowest mode of material nature, those who are influenced by lust, anger and greed, basically. And Krishna mentions in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that one should protect one's spiritual practice by engaging in activities that are under the influence of the Daivi Sampat, or the devotional principles. But there's also, because of the, and that's under the mode of goodness. That's basically activities directed by the mode of goodness. activities in the mode of ignorance are a gross manifestation of the disease of material existence, where one is very much caught up. Prabhupada mentions that mode of passion means that one, and it's acute, you know, when you have a disease and it's really fully manifest, full blown, and it's called acute. And Prabhupada says that in the mode of passion, the disease is symptomatic. We have symptoms of the disease, but it's not full blown. In the mode of goodness, however, Prabhupada gives the example that the disease can be cured. That one can be healthy in the mode of goodness. So Krishna recommends in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends one should pursue these principles of Daivi Sampat, or the principles of goodness that are followed by the devotees, basically. And then there's the Asuri Sampat, or the material energy, basically, those who are influenced by the modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. And at the end of the chapter, Krishna says that there are three gates, basically, that drag one down into these, as a result of the influence of the mode of passion, and that's lust, anger and greed. So one has to learn to control, and that's basically impelled by the mode of passion, and when the mode of passion becomes degraded, it deteriorates into the mode of ignorance. And you know, Krishna explains that the devotees, those in the mode of goodness, are influenced by the Daivi Prakriti, but the asuras are influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance, and there are characteristics and qualities that represent that. Dambo, Dapo, Bhimanascha, you know, they're proud, arrogant, insolent, conceited, and they don't know what is to be done, they don't know what is not to be done, they don't know what is cleanliness or uncleanliness. And one of the symptoms is that they manufacture their own processes of worship. So this is a good example. The manipulation of Vedic sacrifices, especially the sacrifice of an animal, is done by those influenced very much by the mode of passion and by the mode of ignorance, and it's a demonic symptom. That instead of taking the real, or instead of understanding the real purpose of the Vedas, those who are influenced by the lower modes of material nature misunderstand Vedic instructions and then they misappropriate them and use them for their own purposes. And their purpose is basically, as is mentioned here, svasukha icchaya. They look for their own sense gratification, for their own happiness. Yeah, svasukha icchaya yajante devataha. Jagyai pitri bhutapatin kalaha. So they worship the demigods, or they worship the forefathers and the bhutapatin, the leaders amongst the ghosts, for their own sense gratification. Whereas the real message, the message of the Vedas, is that one should actually restrict one's sense gratification. One should learn by following the principles of devotional service and the principles that are enunciated within the Vedic literature. One learns how to, instead of being governed by the modes of passion and ignorance, one governs one's mind and senses by regulated activities which are governed by the mode of goodness. Because even if one follows the Vedic processes, if the motivation is for sense gratification, then one won't get the actual benefit of following the Vedic instructions. So the Vedas may allow the sacrifice of an animal, but it is meant for restricting and purifying, not for engaging the senses in the objects of the senses. So it's a misappropriation. And as a result of performing, you know, one may be performing jagya, apparently, jagya. Actually, the purpose of the jagya is misunderstood. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that, in the first canon of the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that religious practice is not meant to be performed for sense gratification, but rather one can desire a healthy existence and an extended period of life, but for the purpose of inquiring into the absolute truth. In fact, Prabhupada says the devotees are overwhelmed by the activities performed in pursuit of the absolute truth. So it's not that the devotees are not busy, they're certainly busy, but unlike the materialists, they're busy in pursuing self-realization. They're busy in pursuing devotional service. And the devotional service is performed not for their own personal benefit, but rather it is performed for the benefit of everyone. So in contrast, the demons perform sacrifice and religious activities basically for their own personal self-aggrandizement, for their own sense gratification. And distort the methods of worship. Instead of worshipping Krishna as supreme, they'll accept, as mentioned here, they consider the demigods, the forefathers, or Lord Shiva, to be equal to God. And so they worship him or them for not for making the spiritual advancement, but rather for their own sense gratification. Then they engage in activities which ultimately degrade them. And that's completely the opposite purpose of following the Vedic rituals. So, as Prabhupada points out, for the devotees, there's no animal killing whatsoever in the scriptures, which are meant for those in the mode of goodness. There's no mention of animal sacrifice. It's completely forbidden. It's a symptom of the mode of ignorance. And we see that in modern society now. In the Vedic culture, the slaughter of animals was abhorrent. It's the antithesis of Vedic culture. There's certainly allowances, but as it is mentioned here, those allowances are actually meant to discourage animal killing, not to encourage it. there's that story of Judd Barrett. Is it Judd Barrett? Was stolen by the dacoits, and they thought they had a wonderful they had a wonderful find. They had a dumb human. At least Judd Barrett was manifesting himself as a externally retarded, if you like. So they thought, fantastic, now we've got a wonderful offering for Kali, for Ma Kali. But of course when the dacoits tried to sacrifice him, then she burst out of the deity form and then killed them. Right. So that's the irony of this type of sacrifice. It's actually not recommended for those who are in the mode of goodness, and the Vedas take this into consideration. There are scriptures that are recommended for those in the mode of goodness, there are scriptures recommended for those in the mode of passion, scriptures recommended for those in the mode of ignorance. And it's important to understand these principles in order to understand this word here, paroksham, which means confidential, and later on this word is used in another parokshavad. Krishna's teachings, especially within the Vedas, are sometimes given in an indirect fashion. So instead of, saying to those in the mode of ignorance, give up meat eating, if you don't give up meat eating, then you'll be, punished severely. There are some allowances given, but with warnings, so that eventually the direct understanding will be apparent to the person who's performing the sacrifice. In other words, when they're whispering in the ear of the animal that they're killing, in this lifetime, I'll kill you. In the next lifetime, you can kill me. It's meant to wake them up. It's not a direct instruction, but it is indirectly given, so that a person can understand, hang on a second, this is not the right thing to do. So in other words, the message is given somewhat subtly. But of course, for those contaminated or influenced by lower modes of material nature, subtle instructions are sometimes missed or misconstrued or even just simply ignored. But the real purpose of the studying the Vedas and performing sacrifices is ultimately to come to this point of understanding Krishna. And in the in the performance of animal sacrifice, the end result is ultimately not very pleasant, especially when it is performed simply with the desire to pursue sense gratification or just to satisfy the senses. And it was for that purpose that Lord Buddha came and basically drove out the Vedic practices, because people were misusing them, misappropriating them, and using them for the purpose of slaughtering animals simply to satisfy the tongue. And the end result is one's own destruction. And we can see that in modern society also. People don't have any sensitivity to the sufferings of others. You know, there's that saying that people sometimes quote, you know, if the slaughterhouses had glass walls, then everybody would be a vegetarian. But it's horrible what takes place. So people become desensitized to the sufferings of others. This is really the mode of ignorance. And they become desensitized to the end result, which is their own degradation and suffering. So even though the Vedas may condone these activities, they're severely restricted. So the example is given here in the purport about how, you know, the government may allow liquor houses, but then they put severe licensing restrictions on the owners of the liquor shops. So there's not a proliferation, of course, in this day and age. There's a proliferation of all of these things. There's a proliferation of slaughterhouses. There's a proliferation of liquor shops. There's a proliferation of gambling. There's a proliferation of prostitution, I guess.
Brothels.
Yeah. You know where all the brothels are? I mean, not that I know where all the brothels are, but I've heard. Near the casino. Where the fools who win something, think, you know, they've lost so many thousands of dollars, then they win something, then they go and blow it, think, yeah, I won. Have you seen that billboard? There's a new billboard around, and it looks like it's been hit by lightning, right? It's charred on the top. On the way to the airport, you see it. And it says, you know, the chances of this billboard being hit by lightning again is 2.1 to 1 million, right? Oh no, sorry, 2.1 million to one. And then it says the chances of winning a big prize on a poker machine is 9.7 million to one. That's pretty poor odds, right? Yet people still keep on putting their money into the machines. So the Vedas may give some allowance for these activities, but basically they're under very clear and restrictive guidelines. Ultimately, to encourage us to give up the pursuit of sense gratification and to elevate us gradually out of these lower modes of material nature, out of the mode of ignorance, out of the mode of passion, and be elevated gradually into the mode of goodness. Because religious formulas are not meant to be performed for sense gratification, but rather religious formulas are meant to be performed for making spiritual advancement, for understanding who we are, that we're not this body, that we're spiritual by nature, that we have a spiritual form, and that spiritual form can be exercised. In other words, our individuality is not to be suppressed, but our individuality is meant to be engaged in positive activities of devotion. The Vedas may give some allowance for those in the mode of ignorance, but that's not for those who are in the mode of goodness. And sense gratification is a given. One has to engage one's senses in activity, some form of activity. If we're not engaged in devotional service, then that means we'll be engaged in some sort of material activity. So, for gradual elevation, Those in the mode of ignorance, those in the mode of passion, they're encouraged to perform these religious activities with restrictions, and there may be some allowance for sense gratification. But ultimately the end result is to come to the platform of goodness and to the platform of devotional service. Unfortunately, those who are addicted to sense gratification, it's very difficult for them to understand these principles. Krishna mentions in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Parita Chetasam. For those who are attached to sense gratification, bhoga and aishvarya, to opulence, material opulence, and a resolute determination for devotional service doesn't take place. So it's difficult. It's difficult for a person attached to sense gratification and to material opulence to make advancement. So therefore these prescriptions are given in the Vedas so that gradually they can be elevated. You know, even in our preaching, not everybody will automatically come to the point of surrender to Krishna to the following of the regulated principles. And so therefore we encourage them by engaging them in activities of devotion, as Krishna says, one shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but rather one should engage them in acts of devotion. So you know, we engage people in acts of devotion by a very simple process. In fact, you know, the jagya for this age is extremely powerful, extremely potent. Even if a person hears, they're participating in the jagya. They hear the chanting of Hare Krishna. Gradually one becomes purified by that. They get an opportunity to read Prabhupada's books. Gradually they become purified by that, even if they don't understand it. Right? Even if a person doesn't understand, Prabhupada says even if they just have to touch the book, they get benefit. Because this is actually, you know, the Bhagavatam is Krishna. So there's benefit, and these are very subtle influences on a person's life, which apparently has no effect. It doesn't. You don't see an immediate effect, but gradually, the effect takes place. Giving somebody prasadam. You know, person eating prasadam becomes gradually purified. Bhunkte bhojayate. What's that verse? Jagya sistasana santo mutchante savakil bishai munjate te tugam papam ye pachanchatma karana. By just taking the remnants of sacrifice, gradually one becomes purified. That's the real purpose of these sacrifices, is to gradually elevate people. In the practice of religiosity, or in the practice of religious formulas, in the mode of goodness, there's no such thing as slaughtering of animals. But rather there's the offering of patram puspam palam doyam yo me bhakti prayachate. Offered in love and devotion, Krishna accepts a leaf, a flower, fruit or water. So, you know, foodstuffs in the mode of goodness, offered in the mode of goodness, then distributed in the mode of goodness, ultimately purifies and benefits everybody to the point where they can be gradually brought to surrender. Prabhupada mentions following the basically the regulated principles of devotional service. So that's the real purpose of the sacrifices that are given within the Vedas. It's not to enhance our sense gratification, but rather it's meant to restrict our engagement in material activities and encourage us to move towards engagement in activities that are connected with self-realization. But those who are influenced by the lower modes of material nature they'll seize onto these allowances, and they'll say, aha, fantastic. Here, it's authorized in the Vedas. Right? So, you know, we can kill animals, offer them, and then take the prasad. That's what happens. You know, we think that's funny. But you see that, you know, in various traditions. It's in the Hindu tradition. You can see it in the Abrahamic tradition. So we have halal. You know, oh, it's halal. Oh, okay, we can eat it. Because it's been slaughtered properly. You know, we devotees are stunned. It's like, what? But that's the mode of ignorance. Very much the mode of ignorance. Those in the mode of goodness don't. Aren't attracted to such things. And then as mentioned at the end of the purport, we see in, well, the example is given in America, you know, the motto is "In God we trust." It's written on their money. "In God we trust." But then, as is mentioned in the purport here, they profess to be followers of God, but who do they worship? Money? Yeah, money. But here also, entertainers, right? Rock stars, politicians, athletes, and other equally insignificant persons. Who we're worshipping at the moment? All of the soccer players in the World Cup. Everybody's staying up late at night to watch the soccer. Well, not everybody, not us. We're not staying up late at night to watch the soccer. I said at the program the other day, on Sunday, as one of the devotees was sitting in the chair, and he was sitting like this, and he fell asleep. And I come up to him and I said, "You need to have a good rest. You know, you had a hard week last week." He said, "Yeah, I had a hard week, and the soccer didn't help." He was, you know, instead of sleeping, he was staying up at night. But you know, there's an emphasis on worshipping people who are really insignificant and who promote their sense gratification, right? Make lots of money. And it's interesting, you know, the sportsmen are adored as heroes, and they give them lots and lots of money, and then how do they behave? Right? They get addicted to drugs and alcohol, and then they're always chasing women. And then when that behaviour is manifest, then everybody says, "Oh, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Why aren't you setting an example for the rest of us?" So this is very much worship in the mode of ignorance. Worshipping the wrong people at the wrong time in the wrong way. That's the mode of ignorance. Whereas, you know, in the mode of goodness, one knows the right time to perform the sacrifice. Principles of cleanliness are upheld and maintained. You know, when there's remnants, and the remnants are distributed to the right people in the proper way. Prasadam distribution, in other words. So all of these things are done correctly in the mode of goodness, and then that elevates everybody. Whereas these sacrifices and worship that are performed in a mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, for the purpose of sense gratification, that just basically degrades people. If it is not done properly. So there's some allowance, the Vedas give some allowance, but then heavily restricted. So the people get the proper understanding, even though it may not be directly stated. Indirectly, it is understood. This is not the best, and so therefore I should aspire for a better standard. That's the message, the paroksha bad, the indirect message given through the teachings and the restrictions and the prescriptions in the Vedas. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Mahatmaji.
When you were saying about Lord Krishna, there he doesn't care what we do. So indirectly, like Narada Muni telling in the Bhagavatam 24 about Puranjana's doing.
Puranjana?
Yeah.
Yes, I was reading about that this morning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Puranjana is a good example.
How to explain
what will happen to you? Well, Narada Muni is not incapable of giving direct instructions. Right? And we see that in the example of Megrari, the hunter. You know, he was slaughtering animals and just leaving them to suffer. And Narada Muni just told him, you know, stop. He said, you know, all of the animals that you slaughter in this lifetime, in the next lifetime they're going to come and slaughter you. So he really gave him a very direct instruction. And Megrari was so influenced by Narada Muni that he changed his life completely. So it's not that Narada Muni can't give direct instructions, or that Krishna doesn't give direct instructions either, right? But on some occasions, it's not appropriate to give direct instructions. Yes, that's right. And so therefore, especially a teacher has to know how much the student can take, right? Not that we force somebody and then they can't do it and then we'll say, you're out of it anyway. Just like a teacher has to look at the way the student presents and then create learning opportunities in such a way so the student actually learns. Right? There's an example that I saw the other day. A teacher was teaching in a black neighbourhood in an American city, and he was trying to think of a way to get his students to learn math. And they hated math. But then he discovered that they were into gambling. So he got the kids to go, he went into the storeroom and he got all of the dice out of all of the board games. And he was teaching them the laws of probability by throwing dice. And they're adding up and calculating. And they thought, they thought they were just playing with dice and gambling, and they had monopoly money and they were, betting and gambling. But he's saying, I tricked them into learning. They don't think they're learning, they think they're just playing, but now they're actually learning how to count, add up, subtract, divide, working out probability. So, sometimes you're in a tough situation because people are very much in the mode of ignorance, so you can't give them direct instructions. So they're, in the case of Puranjana, that story, who was he preaching to? He was
King Barishat.
Prachini Barishat. Yeah, so King Prachini Barishat was a very wealthy, influential king. So he couldn't tell him, you're a fool. addicted to sense gratification, give it up. So therefore he gave him the story of Paranjana, and then Prachinibharisat realised at the end that Narada Muni was talking about him. Right? So he wasn't offended then. Yet from Nagrari he was able to preach very directly to Maharaj Chitraketu also. Right? Somewhat indirectly, Maharaj Chitraketu wanted a son. Right? And Narada Muni could have preached to him then. This is Maya. Right? Forget it. But he didn't. He and, was it Angira Rishi? They gave him the blessing. Okay. Here's some sweet rice. Give this to your wife and then she will conceive. So then he had a son. Of course they warned him. Your son will be the source of great pleasure and happiness, but also the source of great distress. But the king said, oh, that's okay, that's expected. You know, sons will be good and naughty. That's all right. Huh? But then, the son was killed by the other envious queens. But then Narada Muni came, and then he preached to him directly at that point in time, when he was in a more receptive mode.
Perfect example of
Yes, Narada Muni. So sensitive to the situation. Kala Desha Patra, as you say, time, place and circumstance. So we also have to be. Those in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion will manipulate and exploit. We have to be careful of that also, that our activities and our preaching is done in the mode of goodness, so that we're actually helping people and bringing them up. And sometimes it may be gradual. Right? The Vedic process is a very slow and gradual process. But if we follow it, if it's followed, then people will be elevated. That's the mode of goodness process. That's what the Varnashram system is ideally meant for. Through education and training, one's gradually elevated from lower modes of material nature to the mode of goodness. Then eventually to the point of devotional service. And understanding, that our chanting, our prasadam distribution, our book distribution will gradually have an effect. Gradually, slowly.
So you're saying this?
Yeah. Now sometimes people criticise us because they say, oh, you're just preaching to the Indians. No? In fact, people have criticised me for doing this. And I think, hang on a second, these are our best customers. So why shouldn't we look after our best customers? Right? The Agyata Sukriti is greater in some people than in others. And so, we see an instant response from your best customers. But other customers, may take a little time for them to warm to the product, right? So therefore, we're preaching to the non-Indian community, if you like, the non-Indian audience, if you like. And we're also doing that, going out and chanting Hare Krishna. And we're contacting thousands of people every time we go on Harinam. How many people hear the Harinam? Thousands of people. Thousands of people are taking prasadam. The people are getting books. Maybe not as much as we would like to be doing, but still the process is in place. And we see the results. Gradually people are coming. Gradually they're being elevated. So, we may not be seeing an immediate response from those persons. Their Agyata Sukriti needs to be built. They need to hear more holy name, they need to hear, take more prasadam, they need to gradually be elevated. So we are actually connecting with a lot of people. It's just going to take a little, we have to be patient. Right? Till those people come to the point of surrender. I remember when I first started to be attracted to Krishna consciousness, you know, if I had been treated in specific ways by the devotees, then I would have just run away. You know what I mean? But the devotees were kind, and you know, they could see, you know, this guy's a bit in the mode of ignorance, so we're obviously not going to and you know, there's a certain point at which a person can be presented information, you know, confidential information that they can take advantage of. So it's got to be done gradually, so that they benefit. Everybody benefits. We benefit. May not be happening at the speed that we like, but that's a mode of passion. You know, we're attached to the result. That's the mode of passion. As a person in the mode of goodness, you know, Prabhupada, when he came to New York and started preaching, you know, he must have been horrified by what he saw. And it wasn't as if Prabhupada didn't understand the faults or the weaknesses of his disciples. He did. But what did he say? He just said, come on, keep chanting, keep taking prasadam, We're having an initiation tomorrow. Who wants to participate? And then the devotees asked him, Prabhupada, what does initiation mean? And he said, I'm glad you asked me that. So, you know, gradually. That's the paroksha, if you like, the paroksha confidential process of gradually bringing a person in confidentially. Narada Muni is expert at that. The right time to give the punch, and the right time to just, it's okay, everything's okay. Give him a massage. Okay. Kuntarashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sukhapad Ki Jai.